Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy.
And our producer, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
Gentlemen, we are here on an auspicious occasion. It was 10 years ago that scrappy underdog film studio comic book company Marvel decided that they needed to reorganize the way their properties were handled. They needed to try to get a grasp on storytelling. They wanted to take the incredible potential that they had, and particularly under the leadership mainly of Kevin Feige, who was responsible for the Marvel, you know, movie initiative. At this point, they had projects. They had a film project at Paramount with Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man. They had another film project over at Universal with Hulk and other projects in the pipeline. And they realized, man, we're spread out across different studios, but maybe we could try to make these movies better, unify them, because there have been some misfires. You know, they'd watch some Marvel properties maybe get a little bit of heat and then fall apart. And granted, like, you know, the success of movies, like, you know, comic book movies could have arguably started even 10 years before that with Blade. Blade was like the first real cool comic book, Marvel comic book movie out. You know, DC had Batman and Superman before that, but Blade was a really cool turning point. Then X-Men was a great one for Fox. But then Marvel, trying to take ownership of its titles and really handle it well, launched the start of the MCU with Iron Man back in 2008. Disney, right thereafter, came along and said, we like Marvel. We like the property. We like the potential of the properties. We actually like the way you guys are trying to run things. Bought Marvel and then actually bought the rights to, you know, do the Iron Man movies and everything else from Paramount and negotiated with Universal, et cetera. And later on, you know, you'll never see Spider-Man and the Avengers. Well, guess what? They made a deal with Sony and Spider-Man's the Avengers. And here we are 10 years later. There have been how many Marvel movies now in the MCU?
22, I think.
Or 19 or 18 or 19, I think. We just lost a lot of our geek credibility.
How weird that we would need to know that. Well, it's also a little bit mushy because I know that there is a declared barrier of these are and are not in the
19
MCU.
19 films. 19.
But then there's also, you know, if you're a fan of Marvel, it's harder to separate some of the other ones.
Well, I mean, I look at what's under the auspices of Kevin Feige and what he's done versus when other studios control it, because I can say, yeah, somebody can say we have the rights to make, you know, a Spider-Man movie, but is it the core team doing the MCU? And there's a big difference. MCU movies are far and beyond are fantastic. There have been some good X-Men movies. There have been some crappy ones, but that's not MCU. That's not Feige. It's not that group. It's other people who are controlling the rights to it, and Marvel has input. But that's what I think the success of the MCU has been, is that it has been, you know, what the idea that, you know, once that they were going to take over it, you know, take, you know, handle this, and Disney was going to acquire or take, get back the rights to as much of it as they can. That was the big change, rather, you know.
So is X-Men is not in the MCU. Is no. Deadpool in the MCU?
No. Deadpool and X-Men are owned by Fox, which now may become Disney properties, but will they be incorporated in the MCU? But no, they're not in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They exist in totally different realms from, you know, the. So if you look, here's the list.
A Deadpool, because of that content, makes more wink wink kind of references to it because of the meta nature of that character than any of the other movies do.
Yeah, that's
like when they went to do the Deadpool movie, you know, they went to Kevin Feige and said, hey, we want to do kind of a nod. So there's like a helicarrier appears in Deadpool, right? But it's not called a helicarrier. It's not this, because those are rights that belong to Disney. You know, it's a convoluted sort of thing.
Well, and we also saw a touch of that at the end of, was it Ultron, when they didn't call them mutants, but Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver were major parts of the story. They're like, right, I don't know, they're just people.
Fox owns that. So that's been the convoluted thing. But so the MCU is straight up the Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2, Captain America, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, those sort of things. Those are the ones that are originally went from Paramount Universal over to Disney, and then the Disney produced ones. So you have now 19 films that came out. Marvel started with Iron Man and worked their way through, and then we finally got.
Don't forget about all of the Netflix properties. You have
because those
are in the same universe very, very clearly.
They're getting pushed further away, and they're making less references to them, and they've kind of given up trying to incorporate them.
Okay.
And it's a different team that sort of runs those than the MCU sort of stuff. And those have been uneven. Some have been great, some have been not. But yeah, they do. It started off like, it's all going to be this. They're going to be the TV shows that interrelate. And then they would kind of like the TV shows would reference the movies, but notice the movies don't reference really the TV shows. But as a filmic property, we're now 19 films into the most arguably probably the most successful film franchise ever now.
So is this yes, it's definitely new territory to see this level of integration and unified storytelling. But in so many ways, it occurred to me, and it really became abundantly clear watching the Avengers Infinity War, how much of this had already been done in the comic books. Like that experience, all they're doing is taking to a new medium the experience that was very familiar 20 years ago as I was reading the comic books.
Brian, did an All They Did.
I did an All They Did. Okay, sorry. I don't want to diminish the extraordinary artistic achievement that we've had privilege to witness, but it is remarkable to me that the insight of what they did could be reduced to basically, let's just do what already worked in the comic books on the big screen.
And that's sort of the brilliance of it was these were people that loved the comics and knew there's a reason Justin and Brian and Andrew, these guys loved these stories. Let's not try to change it and go like, oh, no, we need to make it grittier. We got to get rid of the powers. We got to do this and that. They weren't trying to fix things that didn't need to be fixed.
Yeah.
They were trying to bring.
This source material was not something that needed to be, well, how do we water it down? Because nobody who doesn't know who Thor is going to really want to see a god from Asgard who's wearing a cape and has a hammer. Like, we got to obviously make him a dentist from Detroit who happens to have a hammer at some point, because that's what audiences really want are, people that they understand and they know and they can relate to. They didn't read all these comic books, so they don't want any of this kind of stuff. Or the opposite version of like, well, what they really want is just, the hammer and the cape, and let's focus on all that and let's really just drill down on these little minutiae nerd things. They realized, no, these are stories that have been told and retold and retold and retold for decades now. I mean, probably coming up on a century soon commercially for a reason, because they resonate, because they're there. And yes, it does. The idea that there is a richer world that you are tapping into is a feature, not a bug. You don't need to understand all of it. You can leave these tendrils out that can either spin off into new stories for the universe or just serve as rewards for people that are paying attention. And that turned out to be, I mean, Jesus, the unlocking of Fort Knox for modern entertainment.
I remember when Iron Man came out, the most successful superhero stories at the time was Batman. And Batman Begins and in Dark Knight had avoided too many really supernatural aspects. You know, the Ra's al Ghul and whatnot, like maybe it's drug induced. There's a little bit tinges of that. Nobody was flying. Nobody was doing things that clearly violated physics. Iron Man came out. It was a science fiction story. There was nothing about aliens. There's nothing about this. So it was a straight up kind of like, let's make a fun Batman kind of story.
Yeah.
And it knocked it out of the park. And then when they announced that, like, and then Hulk came out, and Hulk was sort of a science fiction kind of, it was, had good parts to it, but ultimately.
It was a monster movie, right?
Yeah, and it was, it could have been, I think could have even embraced that even more, I think it would have been great. But then when they announced, oh yeah, we're going to do Thor.
Thor was the first one that I was like, I can conceive of no world where Thor would be a good movie. And Captain America, it just epitomized cheeseball, you know, Marvelness that I just couldn't even fathom. Like,
and so look at this. This is the initial three, right? May 2008, Iron Man comes out of the box, huge hit. Everybody's responding to and loves all the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. You know, now this is the comic book movie of our dreams kind of stuff. Incredible Hulk, a disappointment. And then Iron Man 2, which gets clipped by the writer's strike and is not as good as it probably could have been. And then like you realize how much depended on Thor, right? Like
well, Thor wasn't even that great. It was surprising. Like, but it gets graded on a curve. I think it set out to do a more ambitious thing by making credible the idea of this Asgardian god. You know, this again, the Rainbow Bridge did not look nearly as awesome in the comic books as it's represented in the movie. Bifrost.
Thor was the most important film in the Marvel universe for Marvel to have the scope. Without Thor work, and Thor, like, I enjoyed Thor, and I get, like, Thor could have been better. Like, that last act was kind of like, I remember, like, in Gladiator, like, oh, we're going to rescue you, and we're going to have a revolution. Like, yeah! And then, no, that Gladiator doesn't have that, you know, because it's, and then, but after you see it and you accept it, when you watch Gladiator again, it becomes better. Thor, you're like, you're waiting for the big assault on Asgard, everything else. It doesn't happen, but still enjoyed it. But yeah, once you're 10 minutes into Thor, I'm like, okay, yeah, see how they're going to bridge this gap.
And also, it was the first star they made themselves. Iron Man is Robert Downey Jr., a star that was of stature before. Incredible Hulk had Ed Norton that, you know, was a star from other stuff. Chris Hemsworth, you know, he has that awesome turn at the beginning of Star Trek, but other than that, you know, he's really kind of an unknown, and that's why Thor works, because you do want to spend time with Thor. Thor's a cool guy, and he's funnier than you expect, and it's through him that I think that's really why it's like it starts to sparkle. It's like, oh wait, no, this is also like a star factory. Like, this is where we meet new people that we enjoy.
So it's interesting. I saw Thor and Captain America out of order. Thor came out first, but for whatever reason, I didn't see it. Maybe I didn't trust it. But when I saw Captain America in the theater, that was the one that was like, those crazy bastards, they did it. They somehow made the cheesiest character in the entire MCU into a deeply likable, credible, believable story. And I love the fact that they set it as a period piece. And I love the fact that later on they sprinkled a little fish out of water and a little like, oh, I know it's corny, but what say we, you know, win one for the USA or whatever, you know, it was great.
I loved Captain America. Captain America, like Iron Man, of course, I liked. And Captain America is still one of my favorite Marvel movies. And it was because, yeah, they had that nod and the wink to the cheesy thing when he's up on stage having to do the cheesy Captain America thing. They knew they were hyper conscious of what they were. And that was great. I mean, it was like Thor told me, don't worry, we can tell we don't have to be Batman Begins, gritty, hyper realistic. We can go fantasy out there, and then, you know, by the time you got to Captain America, like, it'll feel real, and you'll have gravitas. I'm so glad, because I would have been, if you'd put me in charge of it, I would have been like, nah, I got to make everything realistic. I've got to be really real, which is not what great storytelling is. Great storytelling is, I'm going to make it feel real for the characters, which was, I think, part of what I loved about Infinity War.
And also, so, you know, Thor gives us Loki. Another introduction of, you know, Tom Hiddleston to kind of a larger audience. And Captain America, to me, where I really knew that the Marvel Cinematic Universe had the sauce was they make a Thor movie that I like because I never liked Thor. And then they made Red Skull work. Like, as a comic book reader, it's like Red Skull is something that I never thought could play off the page, like in that you know, a disembodied, chattering, you know, like a skull.
Well, and plus also like, in all of the art, he always looked, he was one of the most cartoonish of all the villains. And he's just like, you could just hear him going like, man, it's me, the Red Skull. I wish Hitler was alive.
Basically, Brian absolutely. And they make that movie.
All right, next up to do our reading, Brian Brushwood, go.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the Red Skull. But my skull is red.
And then what I thought at the time was the most impressive thing in movie history, supplanting Lord of the Rings in terms of a money spent and faith in a long-term plan, was the Avengers. Joss Whedon writing and directing, and it is an out-of-the-box insane success. They did a superhero team up on a level that had never really been seen, not since the Wu-Tang Clan, has so many disparate pieces come to mean more together than they were apart. And I thought, that's it. Nothing will ever be. They did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies. It's a 6 movie run, the likes of which we will never see again. At this point, come on, we're getting into Iron Man. So Phase 2 begins. Iron Man 3, a Thor sequel, Captain America sequel. I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, that felt like.
Yeah, remember they announced Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're like, all right. Like, I mean, you can make this work, you know? Like,
hey, but how good can it be? But well, and I think one of the smart things that they leaned into was letting different movies have different voices, which again is what they did with the comic books. There were different art styles, there were different writing styles, there were different narrative tropes and stuff. It was a big moment that anything could follow the Avengers 1. Iron Man 3 stuck the landing. Shane Black nailed it. It was great. I loved it.
It's a different kind of story. It's a very Shane Black story. I mean, obviously somebody, if you've never seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, go see Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. They have the tremendous chemistry Robert Downey Jr. and Shane Black do. But, and by the way, that's the last Iron Man movie, and it came out 5 years ago.
All right, we've had no shortage of Iron Man since then.
Yeah, but that's the last Iron Man movie that came out was 5 years ago, a movie starring or directed and co-written by Shane Black, where Iron Man isn't in the suit for 50% of the movie.
Yeah.
What I love about it is we all have our favorites, and it's different because they do different things, do different stuff. Like, the first two Avengers movies, not a fan. Right?
The first two?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Didn't like the first one?
This
is the thing. We've had many conversations about Avengers, when it first came out.
Yeah. I, long story short, I'm like, yeah, great. We got them all together. It's yay, they're all here. And it's like, great. And we're gonna have 3 come to Jesus meetings. And I just, hey, we're gonna like the choice is like, we're gonna put the Hulk on the helicarrier. We're gonna do all these really stupid things so we can have crises later on. And it's very Joss Whedon-esque sort of thing. And that was just sort of like where versus like Civil War was my favorite Avengers movie.
Oh, that's so wild. I think Civil War is my least favorite Avengers movie because I really disliked
it's not an Avengers movie.
Well, yeah. Yes. But I mean, featuring all of the Avengers. Yeah. I had a real problem with like, I'm watching a fight scene between all the characters that I like. I don't know who I'm supposed to cheer for. I don't like any of this. I don't. And also if you guys had effective communication, this would be a problem.
Divorce, ladies and gentlemen, Brian is not a child of divorce.
Now also Phase 2, this is where you kind of see the turning of that franchise of the entire MCU. They start to have problems with Joss Whedon. They have very documented problems with Ant-Man, with Edgar Wright dropping out. And so that's why Ant-Man is in Phase 2 but comes after the Avengers movie. Oh, I guess Ant-Man wasn't in the Avengers, so or Age of Ultron. So they part ways with Joss Whedon. They have, like, issues there. But in the middle, find Guardians with James Gunn, and it's just all of a sudden they have maybe their most popular franchise kind of come out of nowhere with their least popular IP, and they have all the lesser famous people actually in the movie and their most famous actors doing voice work.
Yeah. And very rudimentary voice work at that. One line.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For Vin Diesel. Yeah. But then Bradley Cooper is Rocket.
Oh, got it. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Of the story. But I really want to talk about, as we get into it, eventually you're going to find out whether or not we like Infinity War. I think that what they've done in Phase 3, which, by the way, we're only halfway through.
Wow.
Is their best work yet.
Yeah. I think, well, it's tough to say because Phase 3 has the advantage of having built on everything that came before it, right? And it's in the moment, your favorite band, when it releases its third album, you're like, this is the best album ever. But it's because you've learned the voice and the message of that band and you're feeling them in the middle of the groove. It's built upon it.
The only thing that I will say is that Phase 3, they have consistently doubled down by raising expectations. They've always said, like, okay, you think it's cool that we got six heroes together for one movie and they're all consistent and it doesn't, you're not randomly played by somebody else except for Mark Ruffalo. Then like, look, we can do that. Now Phase 2, let's tell different stories.
War Machine.
Characters that you don't know. Let's introduce, I guess, War Machine too, into this mix. Phase 3, you start off with Civil War. That's the first movie in Phase 3, which is every character that we had met in a movie that, by the way, spoiler alert for Civil War, ends with the satisfying, crowd-pleasing ending of the villain completing his evil plan and being unable to commit suicide. Like, that's a great way to sell toys. It's like, yeah, like Black Panther with his suicide-stopping hand. Just tremendously ambitious. Then you go to Doctor Strange, Guardians, Spider-Man Homecoming, the first time that they had made the kind of deal that they made with Amy Pascal and Sony, which probably doesn't happen unless the North Korea hacks that what's it called movie go down, which is a whole nother what if. But then the ones that we just got, Thor Ragnarok, Black Panther, Infinity War, just a tonal reboot for Thor. Black Panther, still, even after all this, might be the most profitable movie in Marvel history, even with what Infinity War is doing. Like, this is insane. They're more culturally relevant than they've ever been, and all they do is expand their roster and take chances. It's insane.
They do, but they're doing, like, Infinity War is on track to be the biggest of all. Unless something they find a tape gets released of all the Avengers, like, you know, making fun of emotionally disturbed children or something like that. For me, the weakest one of the latest phase was Guardians 2. You know, I felt like, you know, I love Guardians. And then watching Peter Quill be very passive and having an entire story unfold before him was sort of like, man, like, this is, I think James Gunn is amazing, but I felt like this felt kind of rushed. Like, it didn't, could have gone through another polish. But to be able to say that, where, like, Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming to me is a whole nother level. That
super good.
It's just, it's so good, people don't know how good it is.
Yeah. If you think you like it, you don't like it enough.
Exactly. And I mean, it's like, it's one of these things, like, there's so many layers and levels to it that it's just this, it, to me, it's incredibly rewatchable. And you know, it came out and there was a comparison to Wonder Woman, which Wonder was a good movie. Wonder was a really good movie. And Patty Jenkins has made the only watchable movie to me in the DC universe thing. And I thought Wonder was really good. And I think we were so amazed and happy that this Wonder was a great movie that Spider-Man, where you're like, well, of course Marvel's going to do a good job. I'm like, but yeah, but they did it in such a a different way, you know, high school drama and stuff. And so,
I mean, with just a top notch Michael Keaton performance too. Like there is, that I liked better in all of my movie watching than that scene in the car on the way to prom when everything is kind of becoming clear and you realize that both Spider-Man and the Vulture know what's up and there's in the like idea of the awkward dad driving, you know, the daughter to prom thing, which is amazing.
My issue with Wonder Woman, I think Patty Jenkins' direction was great, but was the writing was that my thing was like, oh, you know, at the end where a guy named Steve flies a German super weapon to try to stop it from blowing up, you know, the American city, and then he sacrifices his life, and I'm like, it's not like Captain America. I'm like, yeah, no, it's a lot like Captain America. But the casting, the direction is fantastic. And that was, I was a little bit angry. Like, I think that's kind of DC, maybe not trying to, but it was a great movie. But then Spider-Man was just a whole nother level. Doctor Strange, I expected to hate this movie. I expected to, everything I heard about going into it, I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. I'm getting ready for my Monday weird things. Let me tell you why Doctor Strange was a disappointment.
I remember. I think it was a Night Attack, actually, that Andrew was on, and we watched the first trailer for Doctor Strange together, and I was getting sarcastic text messages about initial impressions about the trailer from one Andrew Main.
And I stand by what, because that trailer, they were trying to pull certain triggers, and it just, to me, was did everything I kind of didn't want it to sort of do kind of thing. The movie I got was the movie I was really hoping we were going to see and to get. I loved Doctor Strange, guys. I love Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange, I was wrong. I absolutely love Doctor Strange. It was like Wonder Woman. We heard somebody who knew somebody on the inside was telling us that Wonder Woman was going to be a disaster as this. And I think that the person feeding this was talking to somebody who may have been part of the reason why those other ones suck. Wonder Woman was great. I loved being wrong. I loved going, this is great, you know? And then with Doctor Strange, I'm like, this movie's awesome. I mean, this movie is a fun movie. I saw it again in the really good, and it's, I don't like 3D. I went back. How much did I like Doctor Strange? I saw it again in 3D.
Yeah, on purpose. Not because the 2D was sold out. It actually did. I watched it, you know, previous to the Avengers Infinity War. I believe Doctor Strange was the last time I saw a movie twice in the theater in its initial release. So
yeah, I saw it, twice too.
And that was only partially because one of your best friends wrote it.
Yes. Yes. Well, but watching it with Bonnie, I loved it enough that I was like, I want my kids to experience this. And so we went to a 3D showing. And, you know, at the time, I think Josie was 8 years old. And I had to warn them. I'm like, look, people are going to die. It's going to be a more adult movie. And they kept it together and they really enjoyed it. And they came out loving it on the other side.
So the theme is that, you know, when Ant-Man came out, Ant-Man was a really fun movie. And that was going to be like the disaster, you know. And now we're at this point now where we're 19 movies in and you get, you know, Black Panther, which I enjoyed. I didn't enjoy it as much as other people did, but I love the fact that people love it. And it's been a wonderful boon to the universe. It expands the universe. It gets us characters we've never seen before. It makes the universe feel more inclusive to other people. It's expanded. It's all the things that we want. You know, and that. And I'm very, very thrilled that Black Panther does that. And now it's become this juggernaut. And critically, the reviews are through the roof. And we're like, that's the 18th Marvel movie. And it was one of the best reviewed movies of the year.
Yeah. And it, you know, is in what, top five all time in terms of grosses, like,
oh yeah, gross wise yeah, it's insane. And so, and that was
the ninth highest grossing film of all time.
A few movies into the Marvel universe, when Marvel laid out their calendar, these are all the movies we're gonna release, a lot of them were like,
yeah, that's going to work, guys. Sure. Good luck on that. You know, by 8 movies, we're going to be sick of superhero stories. Nobody's going to want to watch them, blah, blah, blah. We're 19 movies in, and it feels like they've mastered how to make it. They make a kind of product, and they make it extremely well.
So this is a separate.
Sorry. Domestic. Black Panther's number 3.
Domestically.
Yeah.
Right?
Ninth worldwide.
Yeah, ninth worldwide, but
number right 3 now, domestic.
Yeah, domestically.
This is another discussion that I don't want to totally sidetrack us, but I'm so fascinated to see how different what they're doing with the MCU is versus what Disney is doing with the Star Wars franchise. It's like, whereas the MCU, they very quickly embraced all the massive diversity of storytelling styles, of different, diversity of heroes, diversity of stories. And whereas with Star Wars, they've done the reverse. They've done the reverse.
I was going to say.
The guys blow up the thing.
Yeah. Is there a difference in how they're telling Star Wars stories?
I'm gonna defend Star Wars in the challenge that Kathleen Kennedy faced when she was put in charge of this. Within the Star Wars, there are lots of books and games and things like this, and there are thousands of Star Wars stories there. But there were no outside of the films, outside of the original trilogy and the second trilogy, there was no, hey, here's our version of Secret Wars. Here's our Infinity Wars. There were no super big successful storylines that we revisited and came back to. So when you were trying to figure out how to tell new Star Wars stories, yeah, there were ideas, there were things, but none of them were audience tested in the way that the Marvel stories were. Marvel had tried to do a lot of big epic stories, and they've had thousands of storylines. Some of them were great. Most of them are meh. But the great ones then became where you start from to figure out, you know, what is the best version of a Tony Stark? And like kind of like Marvel Ultimates, you know, kind of dealt with this. Like, what is the best version of the storyline? What is the best idea for an Avengers storyline? And now updating and making it fit. Where is Peter Parker is best? And when he's high school, he's a kid, he's this, whatever. Star Wars is problematic because you don't have that. You have thousands of novels you could choose from, but they're novels. These things are written by people willing to do movie tie-in money kind of thing, and they could be good, but they're not. The best maybe have been, in my opinion, were the, you know, the ones like the Timothy Zahn ones, but those weren't necessarily going to be the best movies. So that's the challenge at Star Wars
fans. It's just good because it's derivative work, right? Like it's trying to work within the larger framework, but it's kind of always, you know, it's not like nobody decided like, all right, new novelizations, let's rewrite Star Wars. And like, Luke and Leia will know that they're brother and sister, in a way that comics have done that a million times, or just like, all right, let's just change these three things about the canon. And now go, now all these characters running into each other will feel slightly different in the way that comic book storytelling has.
Yeah, with the comics, you had this wonderful testbed for storylines. People will go like, oh, I kind of dig some Old Republic stuff, whatever. But there weren't any like breakthrough extended universe sort of storylines. There were, you know, there were a couple breakthrough characters, Mara Jade, Thrawn, and, you know, Thrawn now has been in Rebels. So now he's, you know, canonical Star Wars and stuff. There's things like that. And that's part of the problem where you can sit with a room full of people and talk about Marvel like, hey, what are the best Avengers stories? Oh, this one. If you say, hey, what are the best Star Wars stories? You're like, oh, we got a bunch of these novels that are all over the place. And it's like, meh.
So what do we think about Infinity War? That's our Infinity War review.
Hated it. Worst movie ever.
Whatever. I saw it 3 times in the movie theater within 1 week of release.
Brian Haight watched it 3 times.
Sure. It's remarkable. Number one, the logistical achievement of the entire thing is fantastic. But also, like, they solved so many problems so elegantly by breaking them essentially into 3 team-based stories. It's basically 3 mini Avengers on separate side quests. And by the way, we're getting into total spoilers. If you haven't seen it, then why did you even start this podcast? The
the most shocking thing to me is there's only one character who has an arc, who has a transformation, who has a beginning, middle, and an end, who we see go through the hero's journey. And it's the villain, Thanos, who gets his way and totally wins at the end without any, don't worry, everyone's okay, just everybody died and bad guy won. End of story. Like, that's a fairly ballsy thing for a company that you don't normally, or I would say 10 years ago, you would not have associated with taking big risks like Disney to do.
Yeah, I guess I would only say the only Thor, the Thanos and Thor start in the same place and then kind of go in their own quest for things that then meet at the...
Sure, but I don't know that Thor really learns any lessons or is challenged. I mean, he you know, I don't know, somebody hands him an eye and he makes a new hammer, you know. Whereas I feel like Thanos, we see the pathos. We see him having a theory, the courage of his convictions. We see him with his faith tested, and he, quote unquote, rises to the occasion by throwing, you know, his daughter into a pit in 9/11 land. By the way, did you guys see those twin towers in the background of that place? Not very subtle thing. Oh, you didn't see that? Okay. Thanos has a real story.
I would say Thanos is the consistent thread, has the biggest arc, or the most complete one of, I mean, he reaches completion, but I would say everybody had a moment. Everybody had a challenge and had something like this. And because it's the first half of this, and I think that Doctor Strange did a thing that he would not have done at the beginning. You know, I think Tony Stark did a thing that he would not have done at the start of the story. And I think that, and I mean, to me, like the other Avengers movies, everybody was static. They were just way, way static. They just needed to come to Jesus meeting three times. And then they're like, okay, well, we are going to be a team. But here I feel everybody had their own little mini story, and their arcs aren't complete, but they're absolutely faced with these just difficult situations. And you're watching, you know, Scarlet Witch decide that she actually has to try to kill Vision. She has to do this. She does a thing that she would never have done at the beginning. But once the reality of what was at stake kind of came into play, I just love the fact that nobody didn't feel like, to me, even though the sheer number of people there, I didn't feel anybody got shifted. You know, I didn't feel like anybody was getting, you know, just, and I've heard, like, well, there's scenes where people are, a lot of people just standing around. Well, yeah, not everybody can talk at once in your group. Like, some people are standing there, but there is stuff happening in every
No one got stormed like in X-Men, where it's just like, oh, Storm's here. I wonder if there's going to be a moment at the very end where someone needs to get blown up on top of a building or something, or there needs to be a distraction. Hey, Storm, you want to take care of that? Cool. Anyway, see you next movie.
We wrote a great line for you.
Yeah. I bet you it's going to be a pun about the weather.
Yeah, I, you know, no movie is ever going to be perfect. And I don't, you know, I don't know if this is my favorite Marvel movie, but I love this movie. I love this movie. I'm excited to see it again.
So,
yeah, Avengers movies and Civil War, too. I mean, I think, like, with this phase, between Civil War and Infinity War, it's like you're just looking at storytelling that, you know, we've just never seen before. I mean, how many times do you see a movie with like four characters and you're like, oh my God, it's so amazing that they balanced all four characters and all four characters got all these great things. This is like 30 people and all of them feel real to the point where, spoiler alert, when half of them die, you're brought in, despite the fact that if that ending were actually real, it would like tank the stock of Disney, considering how many characters are like dependent on their bottom line and like is running their studio financially.
It did. I did derive. It brought a wry smile to my face when the effect they used to show everybody dying was to show them turning to ashes, as if you were watching their obligations and contracts be burned in front of you. Like, and I'm out.
Yeah, except it was all the people that still have contracts.
Yeah, like all the
people whose contracts are up are like, whoa, for real? Like that dude just made $700 million. Like, we can't let him go. This is a disaster.
So question from the chat here. How did the kids feel about Spider-Man dying?
It was really like, I don't normally do this to narrative fiction, but knowing that my, especially my oldest, is a bit sensitive, I full on told her. I was like, hey, it's the first of two movies about the Infinity Wars. What do you think it ends in a good place or a bad place? And she's like, bad place. We're like, what's the worst bad place you can imagine? Like a character that I love dying. We're like, great. I'm glad we've had this discussion. Are you ready to go watch the movie?
Also, think more ambitiously. We're off to the theater.
Yeah. How about all the characters that you love?
What I loved is I took my friend. She had never really not familiar with the Marvel Universe. And so like literally had to point out who the characters were on the poster.
Oh, how fun. So this is one of the things I wanted to know is it a good movie to somebody who's never seen any of the MCU?
Now, the caveat is she's a film student. She's studying film. She's studying that. But she'd seen a couple of MCU but didn't know, you know, vaguely knew some of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
She loved it. She cried at points because she had no idea who Vision and Scarlet Witch were before this movie. But she clearly saw at the beginning these people, they love each other. And they, and she pointed out Elizabeth Olsen's acting and the sadness in the faces. And you watch these actors like, they're doing great performances. Like you're like, and that's my thing. It's like, well, I know it's not real, but do you believe those characters in the moment feel that it's real? Do they really feel that like this is the end? And I'm like, yes, on their faces, they read like people who felt that it was real. And that's what matters. That's a great, you know, you go see a play like it's fake. We're in a room. They're actors.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That's not Danish. That's not a Danish prince.
That's not a real human skull. That was never Yorick.
Yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, congratulations. You know, it's not real. You are more than 3 years old. Yeah, but if do you believe, do the actors convey it in the moment? Does the story treat it? And that sometimes in some movies, they do such a crappy job of like, oh, they're dead. Oh, that sucks. Like, I don't think the characters believe this person's dead. And I don't believe this movie's carrying on like they're dead. Here it did.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that went into... or going into this movie, is that Marvel got a reputation as everybody wanted to study the formula. I think rightly people kind of pointed out a few things that were consistent in their storytelling, right down to the plot of Infinity Stone starts off with the heroes, goes to the villain. The heroes have to save the Infinity Stone. There's a glowing beam in the sky. The villains are paper thin. They're there for the heroes.
Sky beam.
This movie kind of subverted all that, right? Like the villain is the strongest part of the movie. It doesn't end in with just wanton destruction through a city or something like that. And one of the biggest things that I thought would wind up wearing a little thin is that, hey, like how different is Tony Stark from Doctor Strange from Star-Lord? Like, aren't they all kind of like know-it-all wise asses who like are just there for the perfect quip? Like, if you put them all in a movie together, aren't they all just going to seem like the same person? And like, now they're even making Thor more of like a wise ass comedy kind of character. And yet you put them all together and it's like, oh no, it's just like all my best friends, all my funniest best friends got together and they're making fun of each other and it's hilarious and great. Like, yeah, they don't feel like the same character. They feel what's different about them came to the fore, and that was part of the storytelling.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I thought that it was the scene, you know, Star-Lord and Thor.
Oh, that was just gold. That was
like
pure
a pirate
gold.
And a baby. Pirate and an angel had a baby.
Yeah.
And like, you realize how different those movies feel when they go from one to another, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, wait. When we introduce the Guardians, it feels like a Guardians movie.
Well, even before the scene changes, you hear like three notes from your dad's favorite mixtape, and then you know where you're about to be. And sure enough, they're there.
Like the fact that it goes like the credit of where we are is space.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, yeah. Like we are boom, it's Rubber Band Man. We're in space. They're singing along. Some of them, teenage Groot's being an asshole. Like, I'm here. I'm in this movie, and we're having a good time, despite the fact, or even like even the brief moments, the fact that like all we really get of that Spider-Man Homecoming universe is him telling his best friend, like, create a diversion. And he's just like, yeah, Ned, we're all going to die. We're all going to die.
Yeah, like, no hesitation. Boom. You know.
Like, you're just in it. And you just get, like, this little taste, this little hit of Spider-Man Homecoming. And you're like, yay, Spider-Man Homecoming. I like that movie.
Reggie 33_bring it says there's a surprising amount of swearing in the movie. That's actually a good point. I suspect that, we're seeing... I don't know. Now that we're all grown men, it's wild to be around long enough to see acceptable lines and language change. You know, it's the thoughts that are the off limits darkness, not the words themselves, the syllables that you speak. And just like in the 1960s, you couldn't say damn or hell on television. And then by the 1980s, those seemed safe. They had lost their teeth. I think for the S word and the F word. I think there's a new F word in town, and it's
that's the one you can't
exactly
say.
Right. Not that there was an F word in this movie, but my point is that language evolves, and it's a constantly shifting environment.
Yeah, and I think that they're trying to make it feel. I mean, you want to say what these characters say, and again, these are different tones of movies. Like what Star-Lord will say is not what Doctor Strange would say, and Star-Lord curses. So
yeah, it was delightful. It was great, and I agree with Taz_the_man. Thanos' children were awesome. I think that while we didn't get to learn all of their backstories, didn't care. I know that there's an awesome floating Voldemort, and I know that there's like scaly Hulk, and whatever. I loved all of that.
Oh, it was fine. Look, they credibly fought the Avengers. I knew they were going to lose. That's fine. It's good. The powers were cool. I like their powers. They looked cool. They felt cool. They felt like credible threats. And yeah, I mean, and now it's like, look, how do you sell the biggest movie of all time twice? How you end that movie?
Well, I mean, number one is you make sure to have a all-time best-selling lead-in that kills half the MCU so that we can see what happens next.
Yeah, and look, that's a 2.5-hour movie. And
it did we saw
it at the Draft House, and so when you go to the Draft House, as Brian well knows, you have that moment where the checks come. And so all right, well, the check's here. We're at the end of the movie, and it was like they were in Wakanda. Like, I think it was like right as like they're doing the vision scene, and I'm like, oh my god, like there's a lot here, like still to go. Like, what the, like, this can't be 15 minutes from the end of the movie. There's so much that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And the fact that people are reacting to it, like, that's probably the greatest achievement to put a bow on this movie. The greatest achievement is, for a million reasons, there's a sequel coming out next year. You know, of course, Black Panther and Spider-Man aren't dead. They have movies coming out in the next year and a half that they're shooting now. You know, Chris Pratt is on his Instagram talking about like how great it's going to be when they all get back on set in 6 months. It's like, you know it, but you don't.
Right.
And you don't know it enough to want to go see how this wraps up. Like that they had the courage of their convictions to say, of course, no, we're going to kill characters. We're going to kill and beyond who dies at the end. Like, it starts with Loki dying. It starts with Heimdall dying.
that moment when Thanos murders Loki and doesn't quite look directly into the camera and say, and no resurrections. This is a permanent death. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah. Just remarkable. And it'll be curious to see, because I do think that for everything about that franchise, they're not just gonna, like, there will be a cost. Now, who that ultimate cost is, I mean, I think obviously these characters are coming back, but who
goes in their stead or what it takes for them to get back there. We'll see.
They got me on the hook. I'm super stoked.
What if they recast everybody? All the characters come back alive.
My
and that's
God.
How they get rid of Robert Downey Jr. is they recast everybody.
The rage that would course through my veins.
Do you want some predictions?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, you know, they shot a large part of Infinity War too. Like they shot that, right? And there was this, remember there was this cast photo that came out of like the entire Marvel cast?
Yep. I did not see that.
It's like a huge shot. And there we go.
Yeah. And so like, it's like everybody. And I remember looking at this going, wow, that's really cool. And then I'm like, it's kind of a real expensive photo shoot to fly everybody in there and to get some of the top actors of the world to go say, hey, show up for this photo shoot. And then it's like, oh, this is because they were shooting something
that involved literally all of the actors.
Yeah. So, and as I mean, it's like you to get a lot of those people there, like it's they're making something. And so meaning that like for part two, like there's probably going to be a scene where everybody's there. And you know, what's the thing we keep hearing about? Tony Stark, Pepper Potts marriage. So imagine and the ending of part two is you get your wedding and think of Armageddon, you know, the ending, the wedding at the end there where it's this happy wedding and then they pan across the photos of those who are dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably how Infinity War part two.
Some kind of like ghost version of all the dead characters or whatever.
Well, I think we're gonna have like real people, like the people there are gonna be there, but I think we're also gonna see like you're gonna see Captain America, you know, memorialized as a photo, and you're gonna start crying because you're gonna see like, yeah, no, he's dead.
Yeah.
He's dead. These guys are dead. Like that'll be like, no, this is real death, and I think you're just gonna get the tears, you know.
So Chris Evans said he's out after this next movie. Now it's not the first time that a Marvel actor has said that he's not returning to a franchise and then returned to the franchise. Robert Downey Jr. has done it for a very, very long time. And Chris Hemsworth is apparently done with his contract after Infinity War. If one of those three stays, who would you want to stay? A lot.
I am in a bit of an unfair position because coming off of Thor Ragnarok and seeing Chris Hemsworth's performance in Infinity War, like I'm just really into. Ever since they cut that dude's hair, he's my favorite guy lately.
He is. And everybody I talk to, we agree. Like he's become he's the person that's grown the most. He's just grown the most.
Yeah.
And to Hemsworth credit, going off and going and do comedy, playing the bimbo, the male bimbo, doing that sort of thing. You know the rumors about the next Star Trek movie, right?
No. Or is he going to reprise
his... on him?
There are rumors that it might be him. Like, go back to Kirk's father and do a focus on him. Because Hemsworth in the right role is effing great. You know, he did a bunch of kind of crappy Black Hat movies and stuff that like were there. But once you key into him... I was saying before, like, I was sort of like, I love RDJ and I love Iron Man, but I was kind of like, well, I feel we've seen that story. But now, as surrogate father to Peter Parker, I'm like, I want more. I want Peter doing his thing and then Tony Stark put into that role, you know?
Yeah, that was one of the smartest twists that I've seen them do with that character specifically, to transition from, you know, wealthy billionaire playboy to, you know, father figure.
Yeah, they pay off that homecoming arc. I mean, there's so many stories that are set up that are like subplots that are left unresolved in these movies, just, you know, pay off in this, you know, specifically that ending where it's like it is homecoming. It's Robert Downey Jr. freaking out when you realize that he's actually in the armor after the ferry scene where he's like legit pissed off at Peter for you know, getting himself in harm's way. That then is the like cry moment when Peter's like I don't want to go, and he's like disintegrating into dust. I'll tell you what, I don't want anybody to go. like, none of them need new movies. Just
they can all, I mean, Thor needs more movies because I really like Ragnarok, and like they've just like kind of redefined that character. And that really, we'll see. I mean, obviously Captain Marvel is going to play into this cosmic universe, but like right now, if the cosmic universe is Thor movies and Guardians movies, like, awesome.
Fine by me.
Renew my subscription.
And I love the fact they're doing, and Feige has dropped his stock talking about how Marvel stories can take place kind of anywhere, anytime kind of thing now, because like Captain Marvel is going to be set in the 90s, you know, Ant-Man and Wasp is going to take place before Infinity War. And
oh,
maybe
I was wondering how they were going to deal with that.
Yeah, take place before. And so you have the opportunity now that like, you know, you go anywhere, anytime, any place you want kind of thing. So, you know, the biggest challenge is if you don't like, you know, and I thought like kill Captain America, because if you want to do a Captain America story, like, oh yeah, you know, in 2012, he went on this mission that, you know, played into something, you know, or other that, you know, cause you can have this, he was doing missions and stuff. If you wanted to do a flashback thing or put him into a story or whatever, you could do that.
Oh, got it. So you get away with killing him in the second movie, or the second Infinity Wars movie, but you don't actually have to pay the price since you can throw him in other stuff.
You don't have to like, oh, he's alive. Like, no, he died, but this was a thing that happened before.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
But cool.
Hey, picks. We're all picking Infinity War, right?
Go see it. It's good. It's a good movie. Man, a lot of movies coming out, man. I got tickets to Deadpool, tickets to Solo. And
you get your Solo tickets, Brian?
No. I have it's really delightful to have a brand new movie theater that is just establishing itself open up across the street from you, because pretty much day of anything, I can go, there's always a seat. Like, it's like,
nice.
And if there's not, you can just go back home.
Yeah. You wait 30 minutes and there's another showing. They did all day. They're doing Avengers Infinity War every hour and a half hour. There's some theater. There's 14 theaters in there, and it's a smaller community. So it's great.
I wound up buying tickets, despite the fact that I was texting Brian late at night.
Thinking
that Solo had been on sale for a day, and I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna tank. And then ultimately I realized that it had literally just gone on sale like 20 minutes.
First is a picture of all the booked seats at the Draft House. Only one showing for Solo, and still plenty of opening night tickets available at the Alamo. Follow-up text. In comparison, all the Marvel S-word sells out of the 7 almost instantly. We barely got 2 for Deadpool. Solo is gonna tank. Third follow-up. NM... that S word just went on sale. In retrospect, I should have got good seats instead of texting you.
Now we're sitting in the front row because Ashley got tickets the next day. I screwed up.
Solo presale has doubled Black Panther.
Wow. Yeah, oh, wow. I'm telling you, I think Solo will surprise and do very, very well. I think we're seeing the reverse of the Last Jedi effect.
I got my favorite seats, the 7 p.m. Thursday night showing. So I'm thrilled. I mean, I bought as soon as they went on. I'm like, oh, they're on sale. Click, go buy. Bought it, you know, instead of texting Brian, you know.
Hey, listen, man, this is what happens when you're out of town.
Yeah, I'm a Star Wars fan, and I like Last Jedi. So I mean, it's like Justin and I had this conversation. We're like, no, everything you're saying about Last Jedi, you should be saying about Rogue One, you know. But
that's another hour long discussion about why you're wrong for hating Last Jedi, viewer. Yeah, you are though.
Yeah, I will. Like, I'm like, I'll take chance again. I had fatigue. I almost didn't buy tickets to see Last Jedi though, because I watched the trailers and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, this feels like Force Awakens versus Empire, and Star Wars felt like such different damn movies, you know. So
all right,
silence.
Love you guys.
Yeah,
bye. This is
then after.
There you go. Nailed it.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.